Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, shaking things up 5 days a week in the Christchurch sense of the word. Now, today I am going to be reading out a few articles in the first hour and in the second hour with, for the first time ever, on the Vinny Eastwood Show. We'll be having somebody live coming in to this studio by the name of Dennis Paul, who's an elderly Maori gentleman who has had some very interesting experiences dating back to the 60s, work in the film industry where he has met the elite and is also tied in now the banking sector and is attempting to find remedy for that. So this will be his first time ever actually coming public with the things that he knows. So watch out for the second hour. On to the news. Those of you who are watching on the YouTube channel today, you will notice that we have a document cam. Now we've managed to pull it out and record that for you. So there won't be no malfunctions today. So today, for those of you who can see, landlords can in on private earthquakes out of the New Zealand Herald. Christchurch landlords are cashing in on the earthquakes by putting up rents up to $250 New Zealand dollars a week. I used to live in Lincoln, and there were these huge bungalows with like 100 million for the whole house. It was so cold that I watched my olive oil freeze at room temperature. I'm not kidding. It gets pretty dang cold down there. And so I'd probably say that Christchurch rents would be a bit higher than that. So imagine paying $500 a week for somewhere to live with just a couple of bedrooms or something like that. Well, it was freezing freaking cold and run down. Well, that's what competition's all about, isn't it? Especially when you wipe out said competition with an earthquake weapon. Latest figures from Trade Me show that on average, rents have increased by 25% in the past year, as demand has soared by 38% and the number of houses available to rent dropped 21%. Now I'm wondering what Agenda 21 has to do with all of this. The demand has been caused by people needing to move while the earthquake-damaged homes are being repaired or rebuilt. Red-zoned householders soaked up temporary accommodation and the influx of rebuild workers from outside Christchurch. So it's just simply that there just ain't enough places for people to stay, and they're all had their livelihoods destroyed. And so naturally landlords go, I've got the ability to exploit people here. Let's do it. Landlords are testing their tenancy agreements to the limit in a bid to increase rents as quickly as they can. And one example, a group of workers from Auckland have been told their rent will go up $250 a week for more than $600 for their rundown bungalow near AMI Stadium. It was a take-it-or-leave-it offer, the tenant said. And when you've got a renter's market, and this is the thing that's really occurred to me, even before the Christchurch quake, is that it is no longer a renter's market, it's a landlord's market. And fewer and fewer landlords are acquiring more and more of the property and having, basically, because they've got so much property and because they've got so much resources to bear on individual tenants, they've got too much power, I think, to a degree. But this demand for housing in Lynwood rose by 124% from this time last year, while the number of available houses dropped by 42%. Property manager and co-owner of Looking for Rentals, Joe Arbuckle, said rent on three-bedroom homes in Lynwood was between $300 and $450 a week. And she said a fully furnished three-bedroom rental, the Good Garden, was going for about 170, and that's at the top end of that market there. And we've had only had the add up since the start of the week, and we've had three people apply. There are more and more people looking and less properties. Okay, so what's the solution here? Okay, there simply are not enough homes. As many people abandoning Christchurch as only possible. Basically, I told my sister, I've told my mum to live down there. And that's just one of the many reasons. And it's not like I have Christchurch. The people say, well designed, well put together. In my personal opinion, the best food in the whole country is served in Christchurch, and so it's a tourist mecca, really, really beautiful place to go. And so when I tell people to get out of there, it ain't because I don't like Christchurch or I don't like Christchurches. It's because I don't like it when they leave themselves wide open for exploitation of this magnitude by the insurance companies, landlords, and finally, of course, the government and private demolition companies. Now, there's been a lot of different things happening in this regard around Christchurch, where people will be having their homes demolished with very little notice, or they'll be coming around to check the houses, the little government guys with their little clipboards and hard hats. And stuff like that, and they'll just arbitrarily, without barely even looking at your property, just mark it red or green or whatever. Sure enough, many people have slipped through the cracks, and basically it's just a hellhole of a situation, but apparently life in Christchurch ain't that bad. Okay, the amenities are running in the main, but the CBD, the heart of the city, it's just not there anymore. Okay, it's just not there. It's all closed off. There's fences and what have you. There's none of the military in town anymore, but I could be wrong about that. But this all comes down to, in my humble opinion, the implementation of Agenda 21. And on this note, I'm going to find the article here about the leader of the opposition in New Zealand, Mr. Sheeran, has said that the government, mother, is using the Christchurch quake as, well, more or less a jumping pad so they can get through their agenda to close down schools. And I managed to pull up that article this morning on my other computer, and it seems to have, all but disappeared from the article. I mean, we'll see if we can find it in a minute, but what I've been maintaining for a long time is that we've had many different, shall we say, anomalies associated with the Christchurch quake. Now, these anomalies are linked, according to the opinion of some experts that I've had on the show and investigative journalists, people of a credible nature, believe that the Christchurch quake was, in fact, an orchestrated event, you know, using HAARP, chemtrails, and a number of other apparatus. There's lots of suspicious circumstances around it. Now, what's been happening since then, and as we predicted basically that in the outset of the quake, that this thing would be the perfect cover for Agenda 21. What's Agenda 21? Well, it's a total control of basically all resources, education, planning, that kind of thing, massive privatization of previously government-run services, things like that. Sure enough, every single thing that I said was going to happen basically already is happening, okay? And I found the article now, and I just want to read this out for you. Quakes a smoke screen for school closures, says the leader of the opposition. We'll be talking about the Australian leader of the opposition. Focusing on issues such as Christchurch schools overall as part of the Party lost national in the 2011 election. Mr. Shearer and the Labor caucus are in Christchurch today for a caucus, which will also include visits around the area. Labor has criticised strongly over its proposals for Christchurch schools, including mergers and closures. Mr. Shearer confirmed that in speech in Christchurch last night, there was no option for closing of the schools, such as with very little earthquake damage. And as I mentioned earlier, it's not an isolated incident. And my experience with incidents affecting people are simply based on stress or on things like that. There's really something going on in the background. The difficulty is, although you have the methodology of piece, so you cannot prove them unequivocally without primary documentation. Okay, so at the moment, it's just a theory of mine to a large degree that Agenda 21 is being implemented in Christchurch, okay, despite the fact that I know all the ways that it gets implemented and see all the ways it's being implemented. It seems pretty obvious, but without a full-scale admission or some description of background recording saying, yes, we're implementing Agenda 21. It's still up in the air to an extent. So, it is increasingly clear the earthquake is a smokescreen to institute a wider agenda of closure and consolidation of schools. My fear is Christchurch is a guinea pig and will soon be seeing school mergers and closures nationwide. This is Agenda 21 protocol as well. Incidentally, you do one tiny little thing somewhere, and it if it works, if that methodology works, then they implement it elsewhere, is what Mr. Shearer is saying. The ministry didn't say that a city would be used as an exemplar for the rest of New Zealand for nothing. So, let's have a look at this. If we were to apply the Christchurch quake across the country, so we had a countrywide quake, okay, what would be really scary is to try and get any form of justice in an emergency situation, okay, to try and get yourself any form of due process during an emergency situation, try to retain your damaged assets and keep them secure in an emergency situation when guns have been banned. Okay, you literally got no protection, you've got no finances, you've got no bureaucracy being responsive. You're screwed, basically. And they love that. Okay, this is the new order agenda, basically, to a T. It's disaster, crisis, management, and when people are in crisis, when people are afraid, you can manipulate them much, much easier if they were happy and secure and prosperous and educated and well-informed. Most people, you can't get them to do anything. Well, you get a crisis in there, yes, suddenly all your wishes come true. Mr. Shearer also used to visit to, Mr. Shearer also used the visit to remind Canterburyans about the government's decision to keep Environment Canterbury in the hands of commissioners until 2016, rather than allowing elections next year. Now, people don't know what Environment Canterbury is, do you? Okay, dig this. If you're listening in the United States or something, you probably understand there'll be similar things going on in your neck of the woods, right? You know how you got all these county commissioners and state representatives who are meant to be there to ensure that resources are allocated properly so that all the rivers don't dry up or get overpolluted by farmers or things of that nature, of an environmental capacity around a particular region. Right? And you have specific people that are elected in your local body to take the wishes of the people of how to use the environment, how to make these things safe, equal, and fair. You elect those people and they implement the policy that the people wish them to. So naturally, years before the quake, Environment Canterbury, which was at the time going over a number of water allocation rights involving the farms of senior politicians and major corporations in the Canterbury region, was suddenly thrown out by the government because they couldn't come to a resolution, i.e. they wouldn't give the massive government scumbags and corrupt politicians and filthmongers the things that they wanted. So they arbitrarily kicked them out and they replaced them with a new super council, okay, who was all powerful and unelected and handpicked by the Prime Minister. Okay? That's what we're talking about here. In any other country, it would be called like a silent coup. This happens a couple of years before the quake. And naturally, after the quake, they've got all the justification to be there. Oh, we can't do elections. We can't do due process. We can't be fair and everything like that. Because now the environment's all screwed up and we need to do something about it to save these poor people. And David Shearer, being the socialist, communist, UN-affiliated person that he is, comes in and says, hey, let's just hold off on democracy for a little longer so that we can hold on to the possibilities of controlling the country through this crisis. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com.
218-339-8520. The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the most earthquake 2 hours in talk radio. I hope the feed is coming through a bit better to people. Apparently, during the first segment, there was a bit of a breakup because I'm trying to do a webcam and the documents at the same time. So let's hope that this is all good for you. Now, on to international news. Protests as Merkel visits Greece, and I had a chance of seeing I believe one of the Greeks protesters spray painted a swastika onto a police riot shield. Oh God, that's good. That's good. German Chancellor Angela Merkel angular because of the chin that she's got. And Merkel because she kind of moves so slowly and then eventually crushes your economy like a Fabian socialist turtle versus the hare type thing. Got a hostile reception from many ordinary Greeks when she flew into Athens on her first visit to the country since its debt crisis erupted 3 years ago. But she praised the current Greek government for covering, quote, much of the ground required for recovery. And by recovery, they mean recovery of your assets. Emphasis on the ass. I hope and wish that Greece remains a member of the Eurozone, Merkel said, because that way we can dominate them forever. As partners, we are working hard to achieve that. Partner like the Joker partnered with those bank robbers in the start of the second Batman remake film. Her visit triggered protests attended by some 50,000 demonstrated in Athens. The rallies were mostly peaceful, but police briefly clashed with several dozen demonstrators and detained nearly 200 people throughout the day. Most probably people who are out of work as a result of the austerity measures and the cuts to government funding. I mean, they took like a 45% pay cut in some government agencies and stuff like that. Like 80% of people took a 45% pay cut and the rest of the people just got fired straight out. No benefits, no golden handshakes, no nothing. You know, and they're just people like starving on the street kind of thing. And the government just says, well, bugger you. Who cares? Okay. We want to remain part of the Eurozone. Having the Euro dollar and having Angela Merkel as our vice chancellor is so much more important than our people's well-being. And paying back the bankers for their fraud is something we have to honor. That's what I find really, really frustrating and disgusting about the whole situation economically in the entire world right now, is that these bankster scum, let's call a spade here, made the money up and gave it to us upon the deal with the devil, and now we have to honour their fraud? I don't think so. If somebody sells you a car and the car don't exist, do you keep paying for that car that you never got? Okay? No, you don't. You say, okay, you're a fraudster. I'm going to keep my money. Frack you. That's what you say. That's what you're supposed to do. And that's what all the people in Greece are doing, but not the Greek government. No. It was real funny. I thought, after they had their big problem with the government and they threw out their leader and they got a new guy in who's incidentally used to work for the World Bank and his name is Papademos. Sounds like some kind of venereal disease, you know. Only somebody can as stupid as a globalist banker scumbag, you know, would come in and just go, ooh yeah. Let's finance and let's explode derivatives. Let's get everybody into even more astronomical amounts of debt. You know, that's what they do. As Europe's largest contributor to the bailout fund that has rescued Greece from bankruptcy, Germany is viewed by many Greeks as the primary enforcer of the austerity measures the Greek government enacted in exchange for emergency aid. The Germans being the primary enforcer. Didn't that happen once a time ago in history? Debt monitors from the European Union, International Monetary Fund. Don't you just love the IMF? I was watching, Ghost Protocol the other night, you know, Mission Impossible. You know, they call the IMF, the Impossible Mission Force. And I thought that was quite funny. The International Monetary Fund are the Impossible Mission Force. Here's what we've got to do. We've got to somehow make trillions upon trillions of dollars up. That sounds like a real impossible mission, but not for the Impossible Mission Force, IMF, International Monetary Fund, bankster scum. They can just do it on the computer. And European Central Bank, known as the Troika, it's almost like you're going to get speared with a trident or something. That's what Troika reminds me of, or some kind of a surgical tool that is plunged into the throat in order to do a papendectomy. In fact, that's what this guy Papademos is famous for. He's doing a papendectomy on the Greek economy. That's what I'm talking about. Using the Troika. They will deliver a report within coming weeks on whether Greece should receive its next bailout payment, without which. It will go bankrupt. Now, here's what being bankrupt is. Oh,
We can't get in any more debt.
Ah.
We don't have to pay off any more debt either. How much debt have you got versus how much assets you got? And at the moment, virtually everything's being privatised. Airports, ports, electricity, healthcare, schooling, government agencies, the lot. This is the New World Order agenda to a T. Private, public, partnerships, i.e. the corporations taking over the government, which is the signatory of fascism. That's what's going on here. No wonder the people are really angry. No wonder they're drawing swastikas on riot shields. Or something. I wasn't sure if it was exactly a riot shield. It might have just been like some kind of a clear plastic that they did it on. I can't remember exactly. Anyway, Merkel, who stopped in Athens for 5 hours. I'm going to save your country in 5 hours. Said the coalition government led by the new Prime Minister, Antonis Samaras. You're out to the Sahara. Still had to push through more key cost-cutting reforms, i.e., we need to cut services, increase taxation. Now, has anybody ever heard of a vice grip? It crushes you from one side, crushes you from the other. That's what they're trying to do to the people here. Encapsulate them in a vice grip by which they can be controlled by the international bankers. Now, much of the ground has been covered. There is daily progress, Merkel said after talks with Samaras. I'll bet there is. I bet they're getting a couple of million dollars a day of debt. This isn't an effort that should be seen through because otherwise it would make the circumstances even more dramatic later on. Yeah, how unfortunate it would be if we didn't have a world government mandated block of states that have no frickin' rights like the EU. Oh, imagine if the EU wasn't around anymore, you know. Europe apparently didn't survive without the EU for thousands of years and all their own independent cultures and currencies and languages that happen to be working fine. And now as soon as they've put them all together in a European Economic Community and later the European Union and later with the Eurozone and all of this other frickin' BS. They're now all fracked. Okay? It's pretty simple. They get you in by leading you with a carrot. Here, we'll give you prosperity. We'll give you money. We'll give you trade deals. We'll give you this, that, and the other. They all sound good, don't they? But they're designed to destroy your country. To usurp every remaining piece of sovereignty from your people. And by agreeing to these people and their demands, by capitulating, you are simply fulfilling an agenda that will destroy your nation and everything that any previous generation has fought for, died for, or earned money to buy. Okay? It'll all be gone. The international bankers will own it all, and then you'll all be tenants in your own country. That's the agenda. I want to know, own everything, including the government, including the services, including your home. And sure enough, here it all comes. People have been talking about this for decades. And only now is it coming on, and only now are people starting to get the picture. That's the great thing about the New World Order slow communist agenda, man, is that you can live through 30 years of this, see it happening all around you. And only at the end of those 30 years will you click that something's going on. And by then, it will be too late. Although the German leader damped expectations in Athens of a stronger message of public support for Greece, Samaras said Merkel's visit had ended the country's international isolation. Yeah. Being isolated from the international community that's in a free-fall economic crisis, bailing each other out like half coconut shells in an outrigger canoe in some Vanuatu island. That's what's going on here. And apparently this is great that Greece is getting back into that leaky boat. Greece has depended on bailouts from Europe and the International Monetary Fund since May 2010. You know, and I love this. This is the best part. To get the loans, it has implemented a series of deep budget cuts and tax hikes while increasing retirement ages and facilitating private sector layoffs. To date, Greece has received 240 billion euros in bailout loans and has renegotiated a $110 billion deal on the repayment of some of its bonds.
euro deal, sorry, not dollars. So, as I said, you're in a crisis, and you can justify almost anything in a crisis. And people will panic, and they'll sign whatever piece of crap you put in front of them. And they use economic terrorism in this degree. Okay, if I were to come to you and say, sign this document giving me your home, otherwise you will lose your home, and nobody will have it, and it'll all be destroyed and stuff like that. You're like, oh, really? Have you got any evidence of this? Well, no. You're going to have to trust me. What kind of credibility do you have? Well, I work for major communist-funded and social-engineered Tavistock Institute, Frankfurt School, mind control, banking sector, child molesting and human trafficking scum, okay? That's who I work for. That's my credibility. Sign the frickin' document. And then you get into the point where you're like, whoa, I don't trust this guy, but I get the feeling that if I don't sign this document, I might wind up dead. And that works, doesn't it? However, despite all those bonds and things of that nature, Athens must pass further austerity measures worth $13.5 billion over the next 2 years to qualify for its next rescue loan payment, without which the government will run out of cash the next month. It's like you fall off the side of a ship, and in order to save you, they throw you a cinder block with a rope. That's their rescue plan. What are you going to do? Walk along the bottom without any oxygen supply so you can perhaps reach the nearest landmass 1,000 miles off, you know? That's the mentality. And the I mean, this is straight out of the Associated Press. And that was the thing that I noticed about reading these New Zealand Herald articles this morning, is that most of them are out of the Associated Press. They're barely doing any international reporting of their own. Okay, they just got a... It's kind of like Chinese whispers, Chinese media whispers. Huh? That's what it's all about, really, isn't it? One guy, in a so-called credible fashion, exposes and or does an article of this magnitude, which is basically missing out 90% of the information and just giving you BS. And that's what I found is quite irritating about reading mainstream media. It would take 100,000 times the length of time to tell the full story as they allow for the full story to be told, if you know what I mean. Basically, if you listen to mainstream media, you ain't getting the full story. The things that are between the lines are 1,000 times more than what lines they've actually decided to leave in. All the rest of the good information has been edited out. Oh, it's not relevant. It's historical. It doesn't have any context. It's a conspiracy theory. Oh, come on, man. Come on. Now, ending austerity is set to extend Greece's recession to a sixth year in 2013 and push the unemployment rate up to nearly 25%, according to government estimates. 25% unemployment. Holy cow. Greece is determined to carry out its commitment and overcome the crisis. Commitment to what? Paying fake money to bankers who gave you fake money and costing real jobs and real assets and real economic prosperity as a result? That's a commitment to overcoming crisis? Are you freaking kidding me? At this moment, the country is bleeding but determined to remain in the euro. The euro is the thing that cuts you. It is the reason why you are bleeding. Okay? You have a vampire attached to your neck and you say, mate, I'm bleeding profusely. And I'm starting to feel a bit sleepy. I need to hold this vampire tight and keep full snugly and close to me for as long as humanly possible. And maybe then I won't bleed out and die. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe
what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the breeding uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle East is a modern day attack on the native land. Project eugenics planned on the common man. Expand the military industrial complex. And next,
we'll go on from the article about Greece on to Australia. And watch this video here. It's a good 15-minute one, so you can watch that on the New Zealand Herald website if you wish to. But basically, she let's just get something straight about Julia Gillard. She's a female. Okay? Is that a fact or is that sexist? It's a fact, isn't it? Okay. Here's another fact about Julia Gillard. She's a member of the Fabian Socialist Society. Is that a fact or is it sexist? It's a fact. Here's another fact about Julia Gillard. She claimed that there would be no carbon tax when she was elected. And then she immediately signed a deal, once elected, with the Greens for a carbon tax. She lied. Is that a fact or is it sexist? Oh, well, according to this report, Tony Abbott, the leader of the opposition, there's been some kind of a snafu with the other Speaker of the House and things like that about sexual harassment claims and what have you. And Julia Gillard says, basically spends 15 minutes just saying the leader of the opposition is a misogynist, he's sexist, etc., etc. And one thing that she brought up, and I thought that this was quite interesting, is the witch statement, okay? The ditch the witch. Has anybody ever seen this little thing here? I've got to find the picture on here. I can't seem to find it, but basically there was a little sign that people had called Ditch the Witch, okay? And this was related to Julia Gillard's lies regarding the climate change tax scam and such. And as a direct result, no, you can't just say, oh, Julia Gillard's a liar, and you can't just say Julia Gillard is attacking us and things like that. Tony Abbott comes out at a protest, okay, and stands next to a sign that says Ditch the Witch. Okay, and that's interpreted as sexist by the Prime Minister, Julia Gillard. Now, I think that, quite frankly, it matters not your sexuality or your sex or anything like that. I don't care. Okay, if you're a liar, if you're a manipulating scumbag, male or female, you deserve to be exposed and resisted. That's my opinion, okay? If your character ain't up to scratch, if you're not truthful, honest, diligent, and straight up with people, I don't think people should trust you. And people should not have any equivocations about your credibility. So that's that story. In a nutshell, and of course, those of you who are watching on the video here, you can see this Wicked Witch of Oz thing that I've done, and it's got Julia Gillard as the Wicked Witch of the West saying, "I'll get you, my pretties, and your little kangaroo too. There's no place like home. Ditch the witch." And I did that. I came up with that concept for that picture completely independently of these protesters in Aussie. In fact, I only learned about their Ditch the Witch sign afterwards. And, of course, it wasn't all done up like the Wicked Witch of the West or anything like that to any great degree like we've got here. But great minds think alike, don't they? So you can see that and many other pictures at the humour page of the Vinnie Eastwood Show .com if you wish to. It's quite fun. There's some quite funny stuff in there, especially against John Key. Okay, so that's Gillard done. This is another interesting article in here. I haven't had the chance to read it through yet, but anybody who knows the Chinese practices of companies knows that, well, basically, in a communist country, communist company. It's the same thing. Essentially, they will be involved in no small way with espionage, spying through their affiliated and government-supported companies. Now, expert question spy risk and internet deal. This is the headline. New Zealand companies and the government need to decide whether competitive pricing offered by China's Huawei makes subjecting this country to the risk of economic espionage worthwhile, an Australian security expert says. And incidentally, the NSA have also put out a warning label on this company as well. So I'd be interested to see what's actually going on there. John Lee of the University of Sydney Centre for International Security Studies said he supported a report from the United States House Intelligence Committee warning US firms not to do business with Huawei and ZTE, another Chinese telecommunications firm, over fears of spying, corruption, and links to China's military and government. And that's what I discerned without even reading the article. See, it's just so obvious, the protocol comes out. Any government has to go through an analysis over whether the competitive cost structures that Huawei can offer is offset by the threat of economic espionage, Lee said. He said there was no evidence linking Huawei to any case of industrial espionage which involves spying for commercial purposes. But we do know that the level of sophistication of espionage in China suggests there is both state and corporate collusion, and Huawei is one of the candidates that could potentially be part of that collusion. He said economic espionage came in many forms, from wholesale data theft to more targeted spying. It could, for example, be a way for China to gather information on dairy giant Fonterra, Lee said. If I was the New Zealand government, I would be concerned. So just understand that spying happens in corporations all the time, okay? And we've got research and development, patents and new inventions and things like that that other people got that you don't, which if you are capable of grabbing that information and they're just using it without paying for it, you become much more profitable. And also, you become much more competitive as well, because suddenly your competition loses their competitive advantage. That is the reason why spying happens, is to reduce your competition's advantages in the competitive market over you. Okay. Now, its technology is the cornerstone of 2degrees' mobile infrastructure and Vodafone's fixed line network. Okay, so you've got the ability, much like articles that came out of the United States post 9/11 regarding Israel and its infiltration of the United States technology centers. And I believe one of the heads of the Navy was quoted as saying, if I wanted to tell the president something and I didn't want Israel to find out about that, I'd wait until I saw him next. And I think this is basically what's going to happen here in New Zealand. And it's all part of this global surveillance state of the world government, which China's basically quickly becoming almost a partner of. You know, it's like if you had to outline the new world order and go, what can we do here in order to suppress everybody's freedoms, take all their assets in the right way, and have complete domination, dictatorship. And China has done it brilliantly. Brilliantly. Now, Shanna Sullivan is also a commenter. She does not look very appetizing there. Shanna Sullivan is a commentator also says the U.S. telco investigation coup de grace after World Trade Organization complaint about car industry subsidies. The United States attack on Chinese telecommunications company Huawei shapes up like a declaration of economic warfare, complete with buckets of political rhetoric and China bashing. Cynics might think a presidential election is looming. In just 1 month, the U.S. has taken China to the World Trade Organization, claiming the Chinese subsidized their car industry and has blocked the Chinese from building wind turbines close to a U.S. naval facility. Of course, what she doesn't mention in this article is that what's called GM, General Motors, moved
the production capacity to China after getting bailed out. Okay? So you get bailed out and you say, okay, that's cool. That's cool. We've been bailed out and now we can employ Americans. Yes? No. No. You move your production capacity to China and yeah. Basically. And these types of sharking sort of things, it reminds me very similarly of the story of Rockefeller's U.S. Standard Oil that did what was called sweating. If a competing oil not sell out to the Rockefeller oil cartel known as U.S. Standard Oil at the time, would simply drop their prices to where the competition couldn't compete, and then the result would be their profits go down, their share prices go down, and they buy them up for pennies on the dollar after they go out of business. Okay? Similar thing happening here with U.S. trade deals in China and the United States, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which we tie in New Zealand and a number of other Pacific Rim countries, including Japan and the United States, into the Prosperity Partnership, which will be more or less the building blocks, much like the European Economic Community was, the building blocks for a super state where it can be controlled from the top down. All those comes as a trade deal first, and then as it slowly erodes national sovereignty and your people's capacity to survive, fend for themselves, or be independent, that's when they drop the hammer and say, hey, we're going to come in and be your saviors now because you've been so terrible with your trade deals, which are inadvertently, destroying your economy. There's nothing to do with that. Free trade deal is good. It's good. It's good. It's good. You got no freaking option. So, yeah, here's the best option to securing your bad trade deal is with the world government. That'll be nice. And a world currency controlled by international bankers. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Continuing on with the commentary about the Huawei Chinese telecommunications company, there may prove yet to be substance to these moves. Basically, what's been said here is the U.S. has taken China to the World Trade Organization, claiming that they subsidized their car industry, which is now the U.S. industry. I mean, come on. It's just... I don't like the commentators from the mainstream media because they I don't know if whether it's intentional, but they simply leave out important details, I feel. The United States Intelligence Committee's investigative report on the U.S. national security issues posed by the Chinese telecommunication companies Huawei and ZTE is the coup de grace. So, United States is bad, China's good. Okay. Not only does the House of Representatives Committee conclude its nation could be vulnerable to the future Chinese government influencing spying if Huawei and ZTE are able to cement their business as an integral part of America's telecommunications backbone, but the politicians also warned the U.S. companies to, quote, use another vendor and highlighted the potential for widespread harm given that critical infrastructure such as banking, water supplies and electricity were incredibly connected. This is the reason why Mossad and various other telecommunications companies are deeply involved in the United States because it allows you to have a lot of power, a lot of swing, a lot of influence, right? Telecommunications, it's the center to it all.
Given that last week the Wall Street Journal was spruiking, it's an interesting word. I'm going to have to Google that later on. Spruiking a potential IPO, or public share float, of Huawei Technology. Huawei Technologies. You can't make this stuff up. Which is the world's second largest telecommunications company. This may appear fanciful. Now, isn't that interesting? The world's second largest telecommunications company is based in a country that basically outlaws information with a giant firewall. And they censor information so badly that even Google can't even be bothered with them anymore. It's just the second largest world's telecommunications company. That's not a good sign. Not a good sign. But it is and I'm not racist, by the way. I know plenty of Chinese people who are frickin' industrious, real good cats, hardworking. They got their heads screwed on straight and very, very nice, and they're always cooking, right? Real good Chinese food, man. Healthy stuff. Not us, though. No. Most of the there's another thing that I found about immigration that was really ironic here in New Zealand. Hey, New Zealanders, particularly the young New Zealanders, are too freaking lazy now. They've had it too easy for too long. They don't want to go work at Burger King and flip burgers and anything like that. Sure enough, whenever you go to get fast food, it's nothing. It's full of immigrants. The immigrants who are doing all those jobs that we're basically just too lazy and think we're too good to do and whatever, you know. Back in the day, the work ethic wasn't like that in any way, shape, or form, man. People would go out, do a crappy job for the summer just to pay off just to buy beer and pay off their tuition fees and all that kind of stuff, right? Okay? That's how it really should be. But unfortunately, now we've got an entire generation of basically losers, you know? They've been taught that the government will take care of them in every sense of the word, from cradle to grave, and then blah, 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 blah. There's just no work ethic there. And they're not taught to think or rationally or critically or anything like that. They do teach critical thinking in university, however, but instead of actually teaching them critical thinking, to how to think critically, they teach them how to be critical of people who can think, basically. Now, anyway, it is clear that the Chinese firm's IPO will not be happening anytime soon. Its ability to gobble up US firms to increase its footprint will be thwarted. US telcos and suppliers, which have been outgunned by the upstart Chinese competitor, will be delighted that a very large spike has been inserted into its American expansion plans. Huawei claims the US Intelligence Committee's report is lacking in substance, and the company has a point. The 60-page report is light on public proof to substantiate the original claim that the two Chinese firms were deliberately installing backdoor methods to relay sensitive information back to China. But there have also been claims a former Huawei insider had evidence of connections to an elite Chinese cyber spying group. What comes through very comprehensively is focus on the Chinese company's governance structure. It was founded by a former officer of the PLA, the Communist Party's militant wing, and what makes it run so fast. I doubt any company would want to disclose its business strategies to the extent the committee wanted. But nonetheless, John Key's government should re-satisfy itself that Huawei does not pose any fundamental security threat here. Ironically, the same opposition politicians who claimed that the government was too craven to the United States federal authorities in their quest to extradite Kim.com to face alleged criminal charges in the IP space have no qualms about backing the US judgment when it comes to Huawei. Now, the Kim.com scenario saga, I really want to get Kim on the show, man. Really do. No. I've seen a couple of interviews with him. He seems, a lot like me, basically. Real standout guy, entrepreneurial in nature, and trying to do cool things and create new stuff and take on the big boys head-to-head and win, right? And yet, that's not how the system works, man. If you're good, intelligent, and you have a heart, they will cut it out of you, some way, shape, or form. Either you have had that heart cut out of you by your experience, with douchebags, and you will only get to the top by sabotaging people rather than and stealing their ideas, rather than working with a collaborative, powerful team that will take ideas, run with them, and get them up and running. Okay, that's actually the real power of ideas, is actually in the doing, not in the just coming up with an idea. Right. Now, the problem is the Government Communications Security Bureau is publicly compromised. Okay, the GCSB may well have run the ruler over Huawei because it successfully tendered a role for the New Zealand's super fast broadband rollout. And incidentally, there was an article in the paper yesterday about this very thing, about first world problems, right? And I think about 80 or 90% of the respondents said that the internet in New Zealand is shocking. Okay? Shocking. And I'm inclined to agree. I could do with a heck of a lot more internet speed than I've currently got, but I'm restricted, and thus so doing, my ability to function on the internet is restricted. Okay? And that's really annoying. But its own goals in the Kim.com debacle means the result of any inquiry could be seen as a political stitch-up. It's all a political stitch-up, okay? And what I find is it's real funny. Okay, so you've got the draconian police state, United States, saying that this draconian communist-run military planner set up Chinese company can't be trusted. Oh my god! And meanwhile, the Huawei's footprint in New Zealand has grown. Ultrafast Fibre is using its fibre and electronics in the broadband rollout in secondary New Zealand cities. Vodafone is using its gear not only on its own network but in a collaborative venture with Chorus to roll out the rural broadband initiative. And then there has been a tie-up with 2Degrees, which has driven cost-effective mobile phone ownership there. And that has happened in the telco sector here, where I was actually there in the thick of it during the birth of the competition in the New Zealand telco sector. And it's very cutthroat, and the customers get they're basically caught in a crossroads between somebody I don't know nothing about, who I'm already with, and somebody who I don't know nothing about, who I'm not with yet. Okay? That's the situation of the customer. And it becomes up to the salesperson, basically, to either inform that person so that they make the right decision, or manipulating them into making the decision that that salesperson wants so that they can make some money off of them. And that's not entirely dissimilar to how it works at a major corporate level, as far as I'm concerned. You will either have the ability to inform the people and they will all agree to it and go, yay, that's nice, it's fantastic, we've got all the things we want out of it, or we can just BS you, double side, blindside you, give you nothing that you want, and just tell you that it is what you want and take all your money from it. Okay? It's pretty straightforward. Huawei! I don't like this whole idea, okay, of having interdependence, okay, because whenever you're completely interdependent, it means your country has been led completely into dependence. And I've said that for a while now. And when you don't have the capacity to provide your own broadband, your own power, your own water, your own policies, your own trade and economic tariffs and what have you, you're a slave economy, you know, officially. I mean, that's basically my summation of the Western economies as they stand today, is they are all slave economies to the international bankers. And it matters not whether an Israeli company is coming in to surveil your country or a Chinese company is coming in to surveil your country. Sure, these people may not be totally aware of the overall agenda and what have you, but yet the agenda continues with or without those companies, okay? They'll just throw another piece of meat at you and just go, ooh, that'd be nice. And Raycon also signed a letter of intent in August, which it expects will result in a quadrupling of Raycon sales to Huawei to US $56 million over the next 5 years. Huawei travel company Smartcom will soon bring the first group of, you guessed it, 33 Huawei staff and their families here for an eight-day visit. So whether by bumbling or more likely design in the Kim.com case, it's pretty obvious that so-called secure networks are used for spying. But the fundamental issue is how Huawei's rapid expansion has challenged the management capacities or capabilities of American telecommunications giants and their European counterparts. In discussions with one of Huawei's senior managers, it is clear that two factors have driven its quick success. Number one, it is a strong corporate culture, which enables the bosses to take the long view in the Fabian socialist way, rather than focus on the typical short-term quarterly results approach beloved by Western-listed companies, where shareholders' desire for quick financial paybacks through dividends is put ahead of funding aggressive expansion. So, let me get this straight. It's a communist company that uses Fabian socialism in its corporate control structure. What's different again? It has a strong focus on R&D and has had strong backing from the Chinese government, which has extended its huge lines of credit to fund growth. This has meant Huawei has been able to extend very cheap vendor finance to its partners and undercut competitors. So here's the idea. It's backed by the Chinese Central Bank, right? So you can like print out and loan as much onto them as they want, or whatever interest rates or anything like that. Is that how these guys get in there? Right, they have virtually unlimited supply of money, great research and technology, and they use Fabian socialist long view economic policy in order to expand. Seems pretty straightforward, doesn't it? Doesn't that sound exactly like the Federal Reserve and the New World Order and all these other things? It's the same thing, same methodology, always coming through with these same ideas. It's really irritating to me because people don't see it, least of all the mainstream media. So enough on that. Protesters plea to Minister Sam Kuha, who hasn't eaten for 27 days, wants a food grant review for beneficiaries. Now we've got, what's the name, Back Here Bennett, Bareback Bennett, Big Beulch Bennett, whatever name you want to call this lady. I've seen her in person. She's gargantuan. Okay, I'm 6'4", and I'm overweight, and she's gargantuan. So anybody who's telling... I don't know. I don't think obesity is a basically it is an image that we want for the children and beneficiaries to follow. Okay, that's just my opinion on it. It's just not healthy. Now, a hunger strike on his 27th day without food has written an open letter to Social Development Minister Paula Bennett, pleading with her to stop stalling policies on food grants. Isn't that funny? The obese minister is stopping other people from getting food. Sam Kuha stopped eating in protest at Work and Income New Zealand's policy that beneficiaries must undertake budgeting advice after every three grants before they can receive another one. And I'm really getting irritated with the welfare state in this country. It used to be easy, okay? I'm out of work, I go in, and I'm honest about it, and they give me the money, and I walk away, and then I've got enough money to survive while I'm looking for a job. It's not like that anymore, man. You go in, and you're honest, they'll say, oh, well, that's something you probably shouldn't have told me. I'm going to cut this benefit off you. And then you say another thing, oh, we're going to cut that benefit off you. And before you know it, you walk out with 20 bucks a week to live off, right? And because you've got a partner or something like that, you know? It's just freaking nuts. And they also used to have counselors where you would have somebody who knew you, who you didn't have to explain your 20-year history of having a disability or something of that nature every single time you went to see him, and you only had to see him once every 6 months. And now you never get anybody who you know, if you're in the main, who knows you. And so you have to tell them, and it's going to be like every 3 months or every month even, of readdressing the exact same thing. Are you still disabled? Are you still missing a leg? Frick! I listen to the radio and I hear beneficiaries who have been disabled for 20 years cannot work, cannot get a job. They're physically incapable, okay, or mentally incapable of doing it from stress disorders and things like that, and all these medications that the freaking pharmaceutical scumbaggery have gotten them all on. Ladies and gentlemen, you listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Continuing on with this article here, I kind of wanted to wrap this up quickly as well. The workload in this guy who's protesting against wins and food benefits and everything like that, in his Kaikohe office meant he was told he would have to join a two-week waiting list to see a budgeter. So you need food today. And they're saying, we've got to wait 2 weeks before we can see a scheduler budgeter for you before we can even give you the possibility of giving you food that you need right now. Okay? That is what bureaucracy does. That is the intention, in my opinion, is to frustrate and further impoverish and to destroy society behind the welfare state. That's one part of it. It was originally set up so that you have some kind of a catch net so that if people lost their jobs, they wouldn't instantly have to turn to crime or something of that nature in order to make ends meet. But now what the welfare state to be doing is almost ensuring that beneficiaries have to turn to crime in order to make ends meet. But what this guy's doing here is basically he's just like, well, we're going to starve then. Okay, the 59-year-old who had his right leg amputated below the knee after an accident travelled 4 kilometres in his wheelchair to smash 2 windows at the Northland branch last month. He had requested a special needs grant for food and LPG gas for cooking, but was refused. He told the Herald yesterday he had dropped from 73 kilos to 60, and he said he was campaigning for beneficiaries, families and children in particular. In his letter to Ms. Bennett, Mr. Kuha asks for a meeting with the politician and extra support for people with disabilities. Quote, please remove stalling policies around food grants, which give food where and when it's needed. Does that sound like an unreasonable request? You know, they give out these food grants all the time to people who need them, and yet suddenly a guy with a with one leg who needs that food grant is like losing lost 16 kilos in a couple of weeks or something like that because of this policy. Right? Don't make families jump through hoops to get food. And this is, and I think jump through hoops is a very interesting thing because it's training you. It's training you to be a dependent slave. Okay? If you've worked your whole life, paid taxes your whole life, etc., then what is the problem here? Okay? Ms. Bennett said, I respect the right of any New Zealander to protest, and I think Sam Kuha has made his point loud and clear. Now, I'm more concerned that he eat and not make himself unwell. Oh, you're so concerned, aren't you, Ms. Bennett? Lance O'Sullivan, who has spoken out against poverty in the far north, has been checking on Mr. Kuha. He said people could last for weeks without food, and while Mr. Kuha was not eating solids, he was keeping up fluids and taking teaspoons of honey. He's going into the red zone, and he's upping the ante now that he's gone on for over 3 weeks. He's losing reasonable weight. So I guess now we'll see some changes in his health. Okay, so Mr. Kuha's failure to receive a food grant was not a rare occurrence in the region, Dr. O'Sullivan said. Quote, I think this is happening to many of our families, and I think that's wrong. We have the most desperate people in our country accessing a service which has no regard for their dignity. Labor MP Jacinda Ardern released government figures which showed that in 4 years, the number of hardship grants for food nearly doubled in the 2007 to 2008 year. 285,460 food grants were approved. In 2010-2011, the number was over 500,000, an increase of 94%. Ms. Ardern said the numbers were worrying. Okay, so this is his letter to, an excerpt of his letter. I'll read that out quickly. Dear Ms. Bennett, I am a former pipeline worker from Kaikohe. I have been in a wheelchair for 20 years. I try hard to remain independent, but the increases in what I consider unnecessary demands placed on all beneficiaries leaves ordinary people who are already in poverty stricken state worse off than ever before. I've had to go to extraordinary lengths on this because nothing gets sorted and people keep telling us there's nothing they can do. Man, going down to the unemployment office and hearing those words, there's nothing we can do. Oh, my God. I've been in that situation, okay, earlier on. I don't collect any government benefit now. I'm morally against it. I would rather live in poverty with dignity than go ask for a handout, unless I absolutely, and this has happened since coming off the benefit of about four years ago or so. Where we've had to go in and get a food grant when it's absolutely necessary. We've got no options, no food, no money, no nothing, sure. And then you have to go down there and jump through all these frickin' hoops when, in fact, you're entitled, and this is something my auntie told me. She's been splurging on the government dole for years up north there. And she said that, well, basically, you're entitled to a food grant every 3 months, okay? So once that three-month window closes, if you don't go in, that money that you could have gotten just kind of disappears forever. And so she makes sure to get her food grant that she's entitled to. The problem I have with that, basically, is that regardless of whatever you – it's about a sense of entitlement, basically. If you believe that you're entitled to things, you don't have the inclination to go out and get them for yourself to a large degree. That doesn't mean – that if you've worked for 20 years on a pipeline and are disabled, that you should be treated like Shiite Muslim. As the minister in charge of WINS, I believe you have an obligation to get directly involved to sort these problems. Now, I believe there is a protest Paula Bennett's office this Friday, I think. Now, on to lighter news. Coach gets 30 years for sex abuse. Everybody would have heard of Sandusky, Penn State. Goodness knows how many boys he's been fiddling around with there. I think this is out of AP. A former assistant American football coach maintained his innocence as he was sentenced to at least 30 years in prison in the child sexual abuse scandal that brought shame to Penn State and led to coach Joe Paterno's downfalls. Jerry Sandusky, 68, was found guilty in June of 45 counts of child sexual abuse and convicted of molesting 10 boys over a 15-year period. Witnesses said Sandusky used the charitable organization he founded for troubled children as his personal hunting ground to find and groom boys to become his victims. Fox Garden, the hen house. This happens all the time. And in fact, sexual abuse and child kidnapping, things like that. This is the thing that makes real people very, very upset. This is the topic that most radio show hosts don't go into to any great detail because it's so traumatic. I'm actually starting to feel sick thinking about it now. You know? And think about all these poor boys, young, innocent, being raped in the showers by this 60-year-old man. It's gross, man. It's disgusting. You can imagine the trauma that these kids would have to suffer through their entire life, okay? And he comes out and maintains his innocence and claims there's some kind of a media conspiracy against him. Yeah. Kind of get a bit of a lump in your throat about that. Don't you think? For example, here we are. Sandusky has consistently maintained his innocence and plans to appeal. One element of the appeal is expected to be the claim that the defence did not have time to adequately prepare for trial. Sandusky was charged in November following a lengthy investigation. So they spent years investigating him. Goodness knows how. I don't know how long they were investigating it, but in a long investigation, finally busted him, come up with all these witnesses, and he's pleading, to have more time to defend himself. Now, I'm all for people having the representation and stuff like that, and having enough time to prepare so that they're not rushed through the courts and what have you. But you should also have a right to a speedy trial, and justice should be swift. How long were they investigating this, knowing that he was probably raping small boys, and continue to just, instead of intervene and just go, oh my God, we've got evidence here that he raped a small boy. Instead of gathering more evidence, you should have busted him right then, and then done the investigation while you got him in custody and stuff like that. Started investigating, started looking at other people, because that's what happened after busting him anyway. Suddenly, all these people come out and willing to testify and that sort of stuff. Now, this is the thing that kind of made me really angry. Sandusky said he knows in his heart that he did not do what he called disgusting acts. Yeah, raping small boys ain't disgusting at all. Repeating a comment he made in a three-minute monologue that aired Monday night by Penn State Com Radio. In the radio recording, Sandusky describes himself as a victim of a coordinated conspiracy among Penn State investigators, civil attorneys, the media, and others. You know, I was just wondering about this. Okay, could that be true? Could he be completely innocent and all this stuff made up, and all these children that he allegedly molested over years and years and years and years and years and years and years just suddenly all be made up and all come out from all these different directions and all these people paid? And it sounds really fantastic to me, and I'd like to see some evidence of that. But of course, he doesn't provide any. And the media doesn't tell us any about that evidence. So logic would dictate that it simply does not exist. And this is a rapist with no conscience and no scruples trying to save his skin from, you know what will happen to him in prison, don't you? You know what happens to child pedophiles in prison? He's going to get what he deserves. And I don't think he'll last the 30 years. And I would think that that's actually more justice than has been given to him by the U.S. justice system. You know, if you do something bad should happen to you. There's that sort of thought running around my mind at the moment, but it's just like, I don't think raping anybody is a good thing in general. You know, I could be wrong. His statement in court lasted 15 minutes, and his voice cracked as he spoke of missing his loved ones. I speak today with hope in my heart for a brighter day, not knowing if that day will come, Sandusky said. Many moments have been spent looking for a purpose. Maybe it will help others. Some vulnerable children who might have been abused might not, as a result of the publicity. Okay. I have this feeling, and also evidence, that there is a massive conspiracy going on globally related to pedophilia and various other real nasty things. And it's happening a lot more than people would ever want to know about or would ever conceivably realize, okay? It is real nasty out there. You know, you've got massive companies like DynCorp being exposed, even in mainstream media, as being involved in huge human trafficking scams, sex trafficking, that sort of thing. So incidents like this are simply symptoms of a wider problem. Okay, you have a look at how many children go missing in the year in the US, roughly 400,000, who are never seen again. Nearly 500,000 kids who just disappear annually. And like, on May the 1st, which is a satanic holiday in Washington, D.C., around about 3,000 kids go missing on that day every year, just suddenly gone. And people think nothing going on. You know, you got these milk cartons and stuff all over the place. The judge who would probably prosecute whoever did that was probably the one who's got that kid in his basement tied up or something. You know? The fox guarding the hen house is the modus operandi of these pedophile scum. They're very, very dangerous. They've got no conscience. It's like the brain damage. Okay? This happens usually with some people when they are sexually abused as children themselves, usually within the first 7 years or something like that. That's when your emotional parts of your brain develop and things like that. And if you are abused during those years, it can cause brain damage and lock those parts of the brain that allow you to feel empathy and things like that. It kind of locks them down. You can't get them back, right? Like the development stage is over, and it's you're just not going to be a normal person if that happens to you younger in life. And so, and of course, it's a snowball process, whereby you know you'll be abused as a child, and then you will abuse children as an adult, and they will abuse children as an adult, and so on and so forth. It's a vicious cycle. And what's happening here with this Penn State thing, I think that the media is, I don't know. I don't know what my analysis of the situation is entirely because of the fact that there are so many inputs into this that are simply being left out of the mainstream news articles. Okay, so another man said when he was 13 in 2001, Sandusky lured him into a Penn State sauna and then a shower and then forced him to touch the ex-coach. Okay, so these are the kind of things, man. Taking advantage, having their power plays, that sort of thing. Sick people, send them to jail, whatever. We'll be right back after the break. 218-339-8525. Final segment coming up.
Wayne rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart, ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government lead to the collapse of us? Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. Lead to the collapse of us. Right and left are symmetrical on the puppet master's tentacles. The two sides are identical. The troops are not ejectable. They're forming a prodigy and making the Jordan.
Welcome back. Like recording Nostradamus taking a Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about drug cartels. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Top drug lord believed killed. Heriberto Lascano Zetas, drug cartel leader Heriberto Lascano, has apparently been killed in a fight with Marines in the northern border state with Coahuila, and the Mexican Navy said. The Navy said there was a strong evidence. I love doing a Mexican accent. I think they're cool. I might have offended some people there. The Navy said there was a strong evidence of the body of one or two men killed in the shootout on Monday was Lascano, known as El Lasca. The Lasca. Yeah. He's like the Lasca. Sounds kind of like a new Dodge vehicle or something. But it added that more forensics tests would have to be carried out. Quote, information was obtained after the first forensic tests were carried out that yielded indications that suggest that one of the bodies is Heriberto Lascano, a statement said. The Navy Department is co-coordinating efforts with Coahuila State and will be awaiting the conclusions of the forensics examination in the case. And the drug war's been going on hardcore with the cartels and stuff like that in Mexico for quite some time. The death of Lascano would be a major victory for Mexican law enforcement, who are hand in glove with the cartels in a lot of cases. That's what corruption is. And, of course, only the cops and the drug cartels have guns. And the people are kind of caught in the middle in a pinch effect, really. The Zetas cartel said he founded with other deserters from an elite army unit, carried out some of Mexico's bloodiest massacres, biggest jailbreaks, and fiercest attacks on authorities. Lascano, also known as El Verdugo, the Executioner, is suspected in hundreds of killings, including the June 2004 slaying of Francisco Ortiz Franco, an editor of a newspaper in Tijuana that often reported on drug trafficking. I'm sure the local cops just gave that reporter's address to the cartel and took a good payoff and just sat back counting his money while that guy and his family's heads were blown off. Lazcano also, I think, is just a representation, like a boogeyman, you know? It doesn't mean that the boogeyman don't exist. Hell, the boogeyman's there, bro, but he ain't the only one. And he's not the biggest one by far. The United States has offered a US $5 million reward and Mexico an additional $2.3 million for information leading to Lazcano's arrest. The shootout came in the rural area of Progreso, Coahuila, about 125 kilometers west of the Texas border near Laredo. The Navy said it received complaints about armed men in the area and sent a patrol to check out the reports. Gunmen tossed grenades at the patrol from a moving vehicle, wounding one of the Marines, and his injuries were not life-threatening. Two gunmen were killed in the ensuing shootout, the Navy said. In the gunman's vehicle, authorities found a grenade launcher, 12 grenades, and what appeared to be a rocket-propelled grenade launcher and two rifles. This is a... in fact, I've heard many stories about grenade launcher attacks and things like this coming on the U.S.-Mexico border not entirely dissimilar recently. And huge seizures of arms in like the state of Arizona. In fact, there's a chunk of Arizona that's now off limits to American citizens because the drug cartels are so prevalent there that it's just too dangerous for ordinary people. And even Border Patrol, it's too dangerous for them to go in there. The people who are supposed to be protecting your borders are so afraid of the cartels that they treat their own territory as drug cartel territory and stay the heck out. Whoa. If that ain't a problem, I don't know what is. Under Lazcano's leadership, the Zetas recruited more hitmen. Many of them former soldiers and hired caibales, or Guatemalan soldiers trained in counterinsurgency, transforming what had been a small group of assassins into a ruthless gang of enforcers for the Gulf cartel. The Zetas were also in charge of protecting the Gulf's cartel drug shipments. The Zetas split from their bosses in 2010 and have since been fighting a vicious battle for control of the drug businesses in northeastern Mexico. This would all change if the drugs were legal. There wouldn't be any violence. There wouldn't be any of this stuff. That's why the drugs are illegal, to create chaos, to provide a financial incentive for criminals and murderers without conscience to get huge amounts of money, weapons, as a perfect pretext and justification for the government banning everybody else's guns. And the drug cartels never do that. And also you can keep consistently increasing their budgets to go out and fight, try and find these people. You know, let's try and enforce the drug laws and blah, 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 blah. The drug laws ain't working. If they were working, you wouldn't have articles like this coming out all the time, okay? You wouldn't have these articles come out, like, ever, because there would not be a drug cartel that grenade attacks U.S. Marines if it was legal. Okay? Is that not obvious enough to people? Stop the drug war. Stop it, because you're making a war out of nothing. There is no reason to have this war. The drugs themselves are far less dangerous than the laws put in place to protect us from these drugs. Okay, I remember getting a Dr. Green here in New Zealand, you know, high-profile cannabis activist here, probably New Zealand's most high-profile cannabis activist ever, done plenty of videos on him. You can search my other YouTube channel, Eastwood Vincent, if you want to see some of the videos on the Daktory, D-A-K-T-O-R-Y, to get some more info on that. But he gets this letter back from the Ministry of Health saying, why should I be put in jail to protect me from cannabis, and blah, 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 blah. And they said, well, you might get bronchitis. Okay, so here's the scenario. This person might get a respiratory illness, because of smoking cannabis. Ergo, in order to protect them from that possibility of being slightly unhealthy We're going to put them in a jail cell with dangerous criminals to protect their health. Are you freaking kidding me? And he's been in jail for years for this BS. Okay? I've been arrested for it as well. You know, that's half the reason why I woke up. Because when the cops are abusing you, calling you the scum of the earth and stuff like that, while they've got you in handcuffs in the back of the thing and roughing you up and not caring about you and laughing at you and having fun at your expense when you've had everything taken away from you, that stuff wakes you up to the drug war, man. Seriously. If you want to know what the drug war is all about, go up to a cop, smoke in a joint, and get him to arrest you. You will find out the truth about it. It's based on a law. It's based on a law that's based on a lie. So naturally, you need liars and psychopathic scum to enforce them. Okay? And they all get trained in this sort of thing. So that's the scenario. Drugs are legal. Everybody's fine. You got licensing. You got quality control. And there's no violence. Okay? Or you got it illegal and you got no licensing, no quality control. You get corrupt cops and corrupt drug cartels on either side of the debate. And who gets shot in the crossfire? Innocent people. The Zetas split from their bosses in 2010, this we know. And of course, it just seems like a massive power play. And there's so many intelligence agencies involved with the shipping in of drugs, okay? Fast and Furious and Iran-Contra. The CIA ships the guns in and the drugs out, okay? They need the drugs to finance their BS, basically. If you have a look at the long list of CIA directors, you'll find most of them came from Wall Street. Why is that? What did Wall Street gangster banksters have to do with drugs? Well, talking about $1 billion a year, it's like $1.4 trillion a year in global drug revenue. You need a banker who is used to dealing with huge quantities of cash to control those operations. Simple as that. That's why the CIA directors come from the banking sector. Because they're there to control the drug trade and control the US economy through it. Do you have any idea what would happen if you suddenly pulled, I don't know, let's be conservative here, $500 billion worth of liquid cash from the US economy from all the drugs that the CIA and everything pour in there? What do you think is going to happen? If you had a button in front of you right now, no more $500 billion worth of liquid cash, drug cartel, CIA money going through the economy. Press the button and it stops. You press that button? A lot of people really have to think about it. I say yes. Chips fall where they may. If you say no, then what you're doing is simply supporting the system that will sooner or later kill and enslave all of us. You got to look at it in very simple terms sometimes, ladies and gentlemen. And sometimes you have to suffer inordinate amounts before that thought will even occur to you. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. The archives will be up at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. I'd also like to ask people if they'd be willing to subscribe for $5 New Zealand a month. I think it's like $3 or $4 US dollars a month or whatever. And we'll give you commercial-free archives and some commercial-free videos as well, things that I do off-air with other guests as well. So hopefully you can support me in that so I can just keep on getting this information out there, man, because there ain't really anybody else in New Zealand doing it, and I cannot do it alone. That's what I've realized. I'm completely dependent on the people who listen and absorb this information. Thank you so much for doing so. We'll see you again sometime, folks.